This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, focusing today on the 75th anniversary of the day the aircraft carrier USS Ticonderoga was struck by not one, but two kamikazes. You heard about what happened from Bob Mettauer, one of the last surviving members of that ship's crew. But when his story first aired here, he had not connected with the family of his best friend who was killed that day. Soon after Bob appeared on Hometown Heroes, that connection was made. And since then, he's had many conversations with Eddie Mazur's nephew, Fred, who had composed an online tribute to the hero he never met. We don't get to do something like this too often on the show, but now on the phone, we have Fred Mazur from Pennsylvania and now 95-year-old Bob Mettauer from Santa Maria, California, and we're going to understand a little more about how both of these families were affected.
Well, Bob, January 21st will mark the 75th anniversary of that day aboard the Ticonderoga when the two kamikazes hit your ship.
Right.
How often over those 75 years have you thought about that day?
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you, I think of it a lot. I read a lot of World War II books, and of course, doing that, it brings back that experience.
And when we talked the first time, you told me that you lost your best friend that day, Eddie Mazur.
That's true.
When you think about him now, what are the things, what are the images or the memories or the thoughts that come through your mind?
Well, one of the things that comes out that he taught me how to stand on my head, you know, hang by my toes. We had a punching bag in the machine shop, and he taught me how to use the punching bag, you know, and he did a lot of stuff like that for me.
Fred, growing up, what did you hear about your Uncle Ed? What was the extent of your knowledge or awareness of him?
Well, my father came from a very large family. He was one of 12 children. He was right in the middle of the 12. Eddie was the youngest. Christmas and Easter and all the holidays, we would go over to grandmother's, and all the siblings would be over there, and then all their children, which were my cousins, were there. So we had a very large gathering every holiday. So Eddie came up in conversation every time, just stories upon stories about how intelligent he was, how talented he was, how athletic he was. At that time, he had set track and field records at New Kensington High School in New Kensington, Pennsylvania. In fact, when I was a young boy, somebody in the family had home movies, and I'm guessing it was probably 8mm format. I don't think that's what it was. And there were movies of him going up and down the steps at my grandmother's on his hands. And he was so athletic. He could walk up and down steps faster on his hands than most people could go up and down on their feet. And that was just one of many things he could do. He was very acrobatic. He was very strong. Bob told me a story once that he would use Bob Mettauer as a weight. He would pick him up, like Bob would cross his arms on his chest, cross his legs. And then Eddie would bench press Bob. That's how strong Ed was.
As a matter of fact, I used to do that with my daughters.
Because he taught you how to do it?
Yeah. Well, I've seen a broad jump 18 inches on his hands.
Yeah, he was amazing. Anyhow, the word was, and I think Bob told us this too earlier, was that Ed was up on the deck of the Ticonderoga doing his exercises and doing his acrobatics up on the deck when the Japanese suicide planes came in. And Ed was on his way down to his station in the machine shop, and he didn't make it. Bob, you would know better what that was, a ladder that went down to the floor down below, and I guess he was in that tube whenever the plane hit.
And what they were doing, we made weights. We made weights in a machine shop, Ed and I. And they had this room up, or, you know, some kind of a compartment set aside for them to lift the weights and do their exercises, and that's where he was. And when he came down the ladder, it was an enclosed ladder, you know, had sides to it, and that's where he was when the plane exploded on the hangar deck.
So he was just enveloped and engulfed in flames, and when you saw him, he was very badly burned, but still able to communicate.
Later on, I was t- taking people from a compartment that were all overcome from, they didn't have the gas mask on. I was taking people into the sick bay. And when I took the second person in, I heard Eddie's voice. And I saw him, and he was in one of the bunks. You know, they had these nice, comfortable places for the ill to be. And he was right there, you know, the second one. And I looked at him, and I couldn't do anything. There wasn't anything I could do, you know. And I could see that he wasn't going to last, you know. And so I just went back out and got another guy to take back in there, you know. And that's how I remember it.
You know, and I was trying to remember, Bob, the first time we talked and you told me that story. You weren't looking for attention for it, but you made it very clear that you had to carry some of those guys out of there who had been overcome by the fumes and had passed out. Were you ever decorated for that?
No.
Because that's the kind of thing that a lot of guys were decorated for.
Well, and, maybe, you know, but yeah. I don't think anybody ever knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
Except the people maybe that I carried in there.
I'm sure they haven't forgotten. Some of them may be wondering how in the world they got out of there. They may not even know that you carried them.
Right.
I know we're bouncing around here, but let me come back to Fred. So, Fred, you grow up with this awareness of your uncle, the war hero, who made the ultimate sacrifice, made your family a Gold Star family. What significance did that hold in your life, and what was it that prompted you to create a tribute to him online eventually?
Well, Eddie died for the freedoms that we all enjoy, and that touched me. I'm sorry, I'm a little emotional here. Eddie was a man that I never knew. I never shook his hand. I never hugged him. But it was like he was always there. The stories just kept going on, and the family so missed him. You could tell at every holiday event that he was in their hearts and their minds. So anyhow, I was given his Purple Heart from my Uncle Walter, who had it. When Walter passed away in the late 90s, he gifted me his Purple Heart, and I've kept it close to me. In fact, I've had it on display in my house for years. But as I start to age, I mean, I'll be 70 this year, which isn't maybe, you know, real old, but how many more years do we have? And I wanted to make sure that Eddie's sacrifice was memorialized. My cousins and I went on to talk to a gentleman down in Pittsburgh by the name of Michael Krause, and he's a curator for Soldiers and Sailors Hall. It's a memorial for soldiers and sailors. It's an amazing building. And anyhow, we donated all of his uniforms, artifacts, letters from home, letters that he sent to my grandmother, and took everything down to Soldiers and Sailors and donated it. And later on, you'll be able to chat with Michael Krause. And I just felt that Eddie's sacrifice had to be memorialized. It could not be forgotten. And he's just one of hundreds of thousands of men that gave their lives. But it's a story of a local man that had so much to live for, was so talented, and his life was cut short, saving, you know, our freedoms for us. I knew I had to do something to memorialize his sacrifice. So I have cousins that I keep in touch with. The oldest cousin I have is a gentleman by the name of John Nikowski, and he lives down in Houston, Texas. He's 89 years old, and he was only about 5 or 6 years younger than Eddie, and those two played together. He could probably tell you some stories firsthand, the time he spent together with Ed. And then I have another cousin by the name of Ed Sheba, and Eddie is Eddie Mazur's namesake. He was named after Eddie. And I have another cousin by the name of Karen Greenlee. She is the daughter of Eddie's sister, Wanda. Oh, one more, and probably most important. It's the daughter-in-law of my cousin, Bob Kuntz, and her name is Irene Kuntz. And you can't imagine the amount of research that she did to put together. And anyhow, we decided that the best way to do this was to give it to Soldiers and Sailors Hall and let them memorialize Eddie. And that's forthcoming, and I guess there'll be more on that later.
Yeah. All right, so Bob, because Fred had put that online tribute to his uncle, that's how the two of you got connected. It had been there for years, but you weren't aware of it. And then you finally had a chance to talk to a member of Eddie's family. What was that like for you all those years later to connect with Fred and to go back and forth with him?
Well, it was interesting, you know. you know, years had passed, and Eddie kind of disappeared in my life, and now here all of a sudden, there he is again, you know. So it's kind of interesting.
Bob, I have to tell you this. When we went through all those artifacts that we donated to soldiers and sailors, you composed a letter and sent it to my grandmother, and that's in the artifacts that are going to be down there. You expressed your sympathy for the loss of your friend and her son.
Right. I remember that.
Well, that letter is alive, and it will be in the memorial. I didn't know if you knew that.
Yeah, that's something.
When we met you the first time, one of the things that you'd kind of become well known for in Santa Maria was riding your bike everywhere, Bicycle Bob. So how many miles are you up to now?
Well, I told you I had a fall, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm temporarily not doing anything. But I think maybe about 20 to 40 miles from 99,000 miles.
So what are you going to do once you get to 100,000?
We'll see. By the way, I'm not right now. After the fall I had, I can't even go near the bike.
Something tells me you're going to get back up on it, though, knowing you.
I would guess that I will, yes.
You know, before we wrap it up, I'd just like to hear from both of you, just your real feelings about what it's meant to connect all these years after a really tragic day that changed both of your lives. One of you wasn't born yet, but it really did impact both of your lives. What has the connection you two now share meant to both of you?
Well, if I may speak first, I want to thank Bob for service to his country, and I want to thank Bob for being my uncle's best friend. Because my uncle, from all accounts, was one of the best people you'd ever want to meet. I'm sure he held Bob dear as a friend. I thank you, Bob. Your sacrifice to this country also is much appreciated by all. God bless you, and keep riding that bike.
thank you very much for that. You know, Eddie was a special person. I felt fortunate that I was able to know him, and I just wish that things had changed, you know. What happened didn't happen, you know, but there's nothing he can do about that. It's a pleasure to have that, you know, be able to have to reconnect with Eddie's family, but as I say, nothing he can do now to bring him back.
But we can honor his legacy and tell his story, and that's exactly what's happening. It's time for another break. When we come back, we'll hear more about the special place where Eddie Mazur's story will have the chance to bring perspective and inspiration to many. You can find photos related to this episode at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. It gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.